Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Well, we going to straighten out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Next!
Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Happy Monday, folks. Phil here from the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. Once again, we're back here with another show with some brand new exclusive content. Coming to you every Monday. You can find us on your favorite podcast app. You can download us from iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Oh, the list goes on and on. We appreciate each and every one of you. And as always, we appreciate your comments, your ideas, your thoughts. And boy, we've been getting some good ones recently. Changes are on the horizon here at the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. And it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. And if you want to throw in your 2 cents, please, please give us an email. We're at drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. That's our traditional Gmail account. You can also catch us on Facebook. You can message us there. It's facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And then if you are a man or lady of very few words, and we'll say somebody who's as few as 140 characters, you can tweet us. You can get us at twitter.com/DW Groovecast, or as you kids like to say, @DW Groovecast. Hashtag us, instant message us, tweet us, do whatever you like. We will get back to you either on that social media site, or as you've heard before in the past, even address it on the show. So, moving forward, about the show today, we have another special educational edition, and it was one that I recorded a few weeks ago. It's about grip. It's about changing grip, malleable grip. This is going to be one of those shows that is very appealing to the pure drummer, we're going to say, maybe even the technical drummer, although I do want to say that I made special care when making this podcast to not get just into the nuts and bolts of the technical side of drumming, but I wanted to really make comparisons and draw conclusions as to how this technical topic relates to very musical ideas. And so you'll kind of see as you hear this show that it's sometimes a little bit difficult for me. It's hard to put certain things into words. I have to stretch a little bit on this to try to figure out how to paint the best verbal picture that I can regarding, you know, how this technique looks and how it works and how it applies musically to different situations. So you might hear me struggle a little bit on this podcast because I'm really stretching, trying to figure out how to describe these things to you guys. But overall, I hope you will get something out of it. It's one of those things, again, that you might have heard certain parts of it from different teachers and from maybe other players talking about some of these different concepts and some of these different techniques. But, you know, I have my own little spin that I like to put on it, and hopefully it will be of benefit to everyone. And, you know, if you like it, please reach out to us. Let us know what you think about it. And if you have something you want to add to it, likewise, again, please reach out to us. We appreciate your feedback. It really helps the show and helps us move forward. And if you really like it, please tell all your friends. let everybody know about it so that they can get in on the get in all the good stuff. You guys can have conversations about the show. And even if you don't like us, please tell all your friends. You never know, we could be of service to someone that you don't like. So anyway, that's enough about that. We're going to go ahead and move forward, and we'll see you on the other side.
Salacious 17th century.
You will learn by the numbers. I will teach you.
I can outlearn you. I can outread you. I can outthink you. And I can outphilosophize you.
Today, the topic that I have chosen is, again, a conceptual style topic. It's not so much one of these lick-based or exercise-based educational topic, which there are plenty of those out there, and plenty of good ones, too. So I'm going to, again, steer clear of that this week and go with a more conceptual-based type thing, which, again, I feel is sorely lacking in our community. It's good to have, of course, a well-balanced, well-rounded education, and I think a lot of times the conceptual aspect and the thinking aspect of what we do is many times left behind in lieu of, here's something, now go work on it, so to speak. Quite honestly, I understand the reason behind that. It's very difficult sometimes to be able to explain and be able to cogently put together a conceptual style podcast or even any kind of conceptual style book or media. It's very difficult to do, but I'm going to try my best here and give you something that you can learn from and work with after listening to it. So the concept that I want to explain and talk about today is about changing grip and changing hand positions. And really what I want to get across to you in this show is it's not the type of thing where I'm going to tell you to get up against the wall, sucker. This is my way or the highway. Rather, I want to try to talk against that or try to do a show that's 180 degrees opposite of that. Because really what this is addressing, it addresses teachers and or players that have this very sort of dogmatic idea that grip is a concrete style thing. And that once we learn this one grip, which a lot of times this grip is taught when we first learn how to play on a snare drum, that this grip is what it is and it never changes regardless of what you do. So I want to, talk about how I don't necessarily think that that is a good thing. And I just want to open up our minds a little bit on this topic and get everyone to be a little bit curious about this topic and mindful and just aware of what you're doing. Some of you probably are already aware of it, and then some of you have probably got your ears up right now and, thinking, what is this guy talking about? That's certainly not what I was taught and certainly not the way that I teach my students. But I just, like I said, more than anything, want you to, approach this with an open mind and kind of hear what I have to say about these different factors that might change your grip or change your hand positioning and, see how it applies to your playing and how it might apply to your teaching. And I think that, you might find some common ground with some of the things that we're talking about. So again, if you'll just be amenable to these ideas and amenable to the possibility of change with this technique and the factors that might apply to it, I think it's going to be very helpful in your playing, whether it's like the technical execution of some of the things that you're doing, all the way up to the possible prevention of an injury that you might have, whether it be something as small as, say, like blisters, all the way up to some type of God forbid, repetitive stress injury, which, you know, that's all too common in what we do and in today's society. So, you know, hopefully that this little talk can shed some light on some of this stuff. And then naturally, if you're a teacher, if you teach students either in a private or in a school type setting, hopefully some of these concepts and ideas will ring a bell and you'll be able to use them in your teaching practice. So my concept for malleable grip and changing hand positions came from a combination of awareness in my own playing and, of course, awareness in my teaching practice as well. And in my own playing, over a period of years, I began to notice that when I played different styles of music and when other factors such as volume, instrument height and angle, surface density, these different things all changed the way that I gripped my sticks and the way that my hands were positioned when they played these instruments. So upon noticing that, and then also upon noticing different things that other students would bring into their lessons, I started slowly but surely kind of building these concepts. And I guess one of the main things that I noticed when I had students that would come in is that these kids and these adults that would have eventual issues, whether they be technical or executional style issues, where they couldn't play what they wanted to play. They had these musical ideas, but their technique was perhaps holding them back. These were actually very good students, and they had obviously teachers that drummed into them, pun intended, that when you worked on a specific kind of technique, like in other words, when I teach you this technique of grip, this grip is the way that it's going to be, and you're going to use this grip regardless. So a good, conscientious student takes that kind of thing to heart. You know, if you respect your teacher, or if you were fearful of your teacher, however you wanted to, you know, however you want to think about that, you know, you would heed his or her words and try to do the best you can with what you learned. But you know, I found out that sometimes that worked against the student. So we went ahead and talked about these concepts and said, look, you know, you're a good player, you're a good student. Let me explain, let me unpack some of these ideas for you. And, you know, as you move along, you'll be able to use some different hand techniques and some different grip positionings and that type of stuff to your advantage. And so I, again, kind of codified that a lot of times we had some unimaginative teaching. In other words, we had some students that came in that had some either lazy or unimaginative teachers that just said, look, it's my way or the highway, so to speak. And, you know, you learn it this way and it is what it is. And so, you know, sometimes you have to deprogram some people, and you know, you've heard the old saying before, if you can learn something, you can certainly unlearn it. So sometimes you have to do a little bit of unlearning to actually move forward with this. And another thing that I would occasionally run into, and don't think that I like to beat up on you guys from time to time in drum line and in drum corps, but that's not really what the intention of this is, and I'm going to explain myself on this. But another thing I would run into is sometimes I would have students come in that spent a significant amount of time learning marching drum technique or were in drum corps. And, you know, as any of you who have dealt with this before know that these folks are dead serious about their technique. And to their credit, the technique that they teach their drummers is primarily for visual uniformity. It does, of course, benefit them technically for what they're doing. But when you have a, let's say, a line of 10 or 11 snare drummers and several quad players or so, their part of their show is a visual aspect, or has a visual aspect of uniformity. And so that sort of of military style teaching and that sort of military style uniformity that they have, there has to be a certain type of consistent grip that is, imposed upon the line so that it looks right, you know? And also, let's just go ahead and say this, that most of the time these folks are playing primarily on one level of surface. In other words, we're not dealing with a whole bunch of, there are, of course, drum set players in there, but we're primarily playing on snare drums and quads and, to some extent, timpani, you know, that type thing as well. So letting the drumline instructors off the hook, so to speak, on this one here. So, but yeah, we have to occasionally deal with that issue when it comes to having drumline folks and drum corps folks coming in to play drum set. And so when we talk about this changing grip and this changing hand position, the next thing I want to talk about is this stuff happens on the fly. We're not talking about playing a certain style of music and then stopping and then making this very conscientious mental change as far as like saying, okay, now I have finished tune A, tune B is starting, and I'm going to play a different grip and a different hand positioning on this. Nope, we're not talking about that. We're talking about making these changes on the fly inside of the same songs, inside of the same orchestral pieces, etc. And we'll explain a little bit more about that as we go along in the podcast. So let me go ahead and tell you a brief story that is sort of the podcast in action. And it happened when I was teaching in a classroom setting. It actually was a performance classroom setting where, if you're not familiar with this, what it is, it was a bunch of drummers in a classroom. I was teaching a specific method, a specific style of playing. And what we would do is we had a classroom of drummers that I would give an assignment to from week to week. And the following week, when they would come into class, I would pick assorted drummers to come out and play the examples of the homework that I had assigned them. So I had gone through the class and had several different players come up and do the examples. And I asked drummer C to come up, and he sat down to play. And when he did, he started having some issues. And the primary issues that he was having was his right hand. He was playing an up-tempo piece where his right hand was playing a pattern on the ride cymbal. And he was playing a rather strict German snare drum style technique where, for those of you who are not familiar with it, that's where the palm is down. You're using primarily wrist strokes, wrist motions. And he was having to play an up-tempo ride pattern. And I asked him, I said, is this normally how you play? And he said that it was. And I asked him if he had trouble with this type of exercise throughout the week. And he said that he had. And as a matter of fact, he even had a little bit of discomfort with his wrist. And so I, you know, mentioned to him, I said, I feel like that when you play, and by the way, let me go ahead and describe this, the drum set he was playing on. He was playing on a drum set where the ride cymbal was mounted over some mounted tom-toms. So his cymbal was a little bit higher than what some of you might be accustomed to playing on. And it was angled maybe a little bit more extremely than some of the other traditional ride cymbals that you might see. And so his arm was elevated a fair amount when he was playing. And so I said, you know, does it feel like to you that you're forcing your arm, so to speak, to be, or forcing your hand to be in this position? And then he stepped back for a second and thought about it. And he goes, you know, maybe that is some of the strain that I'm feeling on my forearm, is that I'm kind of forcing my hand over a little bit. And so I just said, why don't you try, you know, letting your hand do what it wants to do and see if maybe your thumb might want to come up on top. Maybe try a little bit more of a French grip. He did, and it felt a little more comfortable to him. Of course, it didn't yield instantaneous results. He had to still work on this stuff. But he did find it a little bit more comfortable. So that little story there kind of encapsulates what we're going to be discussing further in the podcast. So before we go ahead and move on to these individual factors that can change and modify your grip and your hand position, I want to go ahead and discuss also the different grips that we're going to be bandying about throughout the rest of the show. Because some of you are going to be aware of these, the names of these grips, and some of you are not. So first we're going to tackle there's a gamut, so to speak, or there's several different kinds of matched grips that I'm going to talk about throughout the rest of the podcast. And I'm going to talk about each one, describe each one, and try the best that I can to give you a description of what they actually look like and the technique that you use and the motions that you use to execute each of these grips. Now, it's a little difficult, again, to describe these. I'm going to paint as good of a picture as I can through audio, but if you go online and look for these grips, on some different educational websites, and to some extent, you can also, if you're careful, look on Wikipedia and some other places, you can see some pretty good pictures and descriptions of these, okay? All right, so first I'm going to take the matched grip techniques and describe them. The first one that I'm going to talk about that you've already heard me mention just prior is I'm going to talk about the matched German grip. Now, this grip, we derive it on drum set from the German timpani grip. And it's basically the same grip, except we're using a drumstick instead of a timpani stick. The way your hands are going to look when you're playing a matched German grip is if both hands are in the ready playing position over a snare drum, the palms will be directly facing the floor. Okay, they will be right above, or I should say they'll be above the drum and, of course, and facing the floor. Your thumbs will be facing inward toward each other. Okay, so your palms will be completely turned over, thumbs facing each other. All right. The motion that we make when we play a strict German grip is one of primarily wrists. And it's the kind of wrist motion that we make when we're waving by, right? When we're waving bye-bye. So it's a wrist up and down style wrist motion. You can, of course, use some fingers, but the strict German timpani technique is pretty much all wrists. That gives you a very deep, bold sound when you're playing timpani. Your hands, of course, are on top of the sticks. They're above the sticks, so that also attributes to that deep, bold sound that you get. So, again, German grip, palms down, thumbs facing each other, primarily using wrists with the hands over the sticks to get the sound, okay? The next grip that is also a match grip that we're going to talk about is the French grip. And again, this is a grip that was, again, derived from timpani. People call it the French timpani grip. Now, the French timpani grip is pretty different from the matched German grip. The French timpani grip is going to give you more, it's going to give you overall a lighter, airier style of sound. And it's also based more on finger technique or finger bounce and finger motions than full wrist motions, especially when you're playing timpani. But to describe it, If you're playing snare drum, again, and the sticks are in your hands, this time your thumbs are going to be on top of the stick. In other words, your thumbs are almost going to be like facing the ceiling, right? And the sides of your hands, the back sides of your hands, will be facing the floor, all right? Your insides of your fingers, like the tops, I guess it would be, of your fingers, will be facing each other inward, okay? The motion that we make involves the fingers and the wrists whenever we play, especially snare drum. A lot of the strict French grip timpani guys use just the fingers whenever they play. But the motion that we make, you could say that it's very similar to when you are casting a fishing rod or a fishing lure out into the water, where the thumb is toward our body and we flick our wrists and fingers forward and cast that lure out into the water. I've also heard some people describe it almost as it's the same type of hand positioning and technique and wrist and finger motion that you would use if you're holding a hammer and then you're also trying to drive a nail with it. That is also somewhat of a similar motion that you could make as well. And so that is our French matched grip, okay? And then the next grip, or the last grip that we're going to talk about for the matched grip, is the American grip. And this is probably the grip, if you handed sticks to any beginner, they would probably hold sticks in this fashion. And the American grip, matched grip, is almost exactly in between. It's a good hybrid of both the German grip and the French grip. And what it is your palms are not completely and totally facing downward. Let's say they're in between, maybe at like a 45 degree angle, so to speak. The palms are still primarily down, but not forcefully held down, or not strictly down facing the ground. Your thumbs will also be at roughly a 45 degree angle. They're not facing each other inward, and they're certainly not on top like French grip. They're a little bit more of a 45 degree angle. And our motion that we make is, again, a hybrid of fingers and wrists, or a hybrid of French and German grip. So that means we use our wrist, but we also use fingers underneath. And what I like to tell my students, the way that I like to use my fingers underneath whenever I'm playing American matched grip, I like to use my middle finger and ring finger almost like one finger. In other words, those two fingers work in tandem simultaneously whenever I use my finger control or finger bounce underneath, right? So hopefully that kind of clears, or at least paints somewhat of a picture for you. And again, like I said, please feel free to look online to get some actual photographs or drawings of someone who has gotten the correct pictures and the correct look of those. It might help you out even a little bit more. So now let's talk just quickly about traditional grip. And for those of you who are right-handed, traditional grip is held in the left hand. And that's the left-hand grip is what we're going to talk about here before we start talking about the factors that will affect these different grips and changing grips. So for our left hand, when we hold traditional grip, the left-hand grip is primarily held between the thumb, like the webbing of the thumb, and the index finger. That's where the primary grip is, okay? We rest the stick in between the middle finger and the ring finger of the left hand. And then the big difference as far as motion goes is, instead of using an up and down waving motion like the German grip, or the hybrid of fingers and wrist in the American grip, and then of course just the fingers for the French grip, the left hand traditional grip primarily uses a rotary motion, okay? And to describe that, that's the same kind of motion that we would make if we walk over to a doorknob and open the door. In other words, we have to twist using a rotary motion to open or close the door, right? You can also say another description of that would be, if you are washing your hands and there's no towels in the bathroom, you flick your wrist in a rotating kind of motion to get that water off. And that is also a very similar style motion that we would make to when we're making strokes with the traditional grip. Now, the finger control and the finger bounces and whatnot on the left hand can be done a variety of different ways. You can even use thumb bouncing and thumb technique as well. We're not going to talk quite as much about that in this podcast as we are the hand positionings and the hand techniques of the match grip, but I just want to let you know that you certainly can use different types of finger bouncing and wrist control, wrist motion and finger bouncing and finger control on traditional grip as well, but again, like I said, not going to be discussing that quite as much on this podcast. We will touch on it. Okay, so now that we've kind of gotten those different grips and the descriptions out of the way, let's go ahead and talk about all these different factors that we briefly listed earlier today that factor in on our malleable grip and our changing hand positions. So one of the first ones that I want to talk about is tempo. Tempo absolutely will change your grip or have a tendency to change your grip from time to time. For example, when we're playing a very slow tempo, or let's say we're just playing a piece of music that has very few notes, just minimal note playing all the way through, we can almost use no grip at all. A very loose, very, very light grip to make these notes, whether they be loud notes or soft notes. In contrast, we can then have a very, very fast tempo, or we can have a piece of music that has a lot of notes in a row that we're playing, and you primarily will have a slightly firmer grip and use all of your grip, including your fingers, like the technique we talked about prior where we're using our middle finger and ring finger on matched grip to create finger bounce and finger control for these faster and notier style passages. Whereas before, we really didn't have to use any kind of finger control or really any kind of a grip when you have to play, you know, very soft or very sparse passages. Hope that makes sense there for you on that. The next factor that can certainly change your grip and your hand positioning is the volume or velocity that you strike the instrument. And what I mean by that is, again, if we're playing, for example, a very soft drum set beat, or, for example, if we're playing a pianissimo orchestral snare drum package passage, or perhaps even like an etude out of one of our either rudimental style snare drum books or perhaps orchestral snare drum books, most likely we're going to use a very proper style 3-point fulcrum with some finger technique on both hands, some finger bounce, finger control on both hands to execute these passages. And so, for example, when I say 3-point fulcrum, what I'm talking about is where our thumb, index finger, and middle finger, they hold the stick and they pivot primarily over the middle finger. That would be our 3-point fulcrum. And then we can use that middle finger and the ring finger also for our finger bounce whenever we're working with that. So that's certainly one way that we can execute these softer passages when we don't need a whole lot of power whenever we do that. And it works very, very well. Now, for an opposite, which would be a very loud passage, let's say we're playing a rock groove where we have a explosive backbeat on 2 and 4, especially if we're hitting rim shots on 2 and 4, and that's primarily all we're doing with the left hand, a 180 degree opposite from what we talked about before would be, as you bring that stick down and you hit that backbeat, the index finger and even sometimes the middle finger totally releases at the point of impact. So let me state that one more time. The grip is intact during the upswing or the upstroke and even the downstroke, and then upon impact, we have the complete release of the 3-point fulcrum where the thumb, index, and middle finger totally release. And basically what that does is it certainly allows the stick and the drum to absorb the maximum impact of that loud note that we're playing, that loud rim shot backbeat. I like to tell my students that pretty much what happens is that upon the release of that backbeat, you can control at least momentarily the stick by the grip of, if you want to call it even a grip, or at least the stability of your ring finger and your little finger. Now, here's the caveat. Be very careful that you do not over-control your stick using that ring finger and little finger, because the tendency will be, if you over-control it using those last two fingers, if you over-grip it, you can get blisters and or cracked skin there where your skin will dry out where the stick's been rubbing too much up against that. So that's just one quick caveat on that one there. So that's a pretty good example on both ends of the spectrum of your grip changing between a soft orchestral passage and then, say, a louder passage whenever you play. Now, the next factor that can, of course, change your grip and hand positioning is the height of the instrument or the surface that you are playing. So this will take a little bit. I'm going to do a little bit of a demonstration, or at least an explanation, of body ergonomics on this one. Okay, so let's talk about, on a drum set, some different surface heights that we commonly deal with. For example, if we talk about some lower placed or lower mounted instruments, we might talk about the snare drum, which is normally mounted roughly waist height. Same thing with floor toms. They're normally roughly waist height. They're a little bit lower. And then we have some, so we'll call them mid-height instruments, whether they be tom-toms, maybe a few cymbals, hi-hat. And then we have, in some instances, some very high-mounted instruments. You might have your crashes up high. You might have China cymbals, especially inverted China cymbals, like for a lot of the hard rock bands, especially from the mid-80s and whatnot. You would see, for show primarily, these Chinese cymbals mounted up nice and high. That would be an extreme version of this height discrepancy, right? So now I want to talk to you about just some simple body ergonomics and my reasoning for how your hand positioning would change as opposed when talking about a lower mounted instrument versus a higher mounted instrument. You might have seen this this little exercise done before on different videos or instructional DVDs, but I'll go ahead and describe it for you the best that I can through words. So our hand positioning and arm positioning will change just because of the way that our bodies are ergonomically designed. And so a little exercise that I'll have you do is, if you're seated at your drum throne or seated at your chair, go ahead and we'll use your right arm, let your arm hang down and completely relax and just rest there, let it hang by your side. What you'll notice, if you're not forcing it to do anything, if you're just totally relaxed, is that your palm will be facing behind you or pointing behind you. Your thumb will be pretty much pointing at your thigh, okay, or at your side, depending on where your arm is hanging. And then the back of your hand is pointing forward or in front of you. All right, and that's our normal at-rest arm when it hangs at our side, okay? Now, what I want you to do is use your elbow, just your elbow, and bring your forearm upward. And what I want you to do is stop it when it becomes parallel to the floor. And what you'll notice is that when it's at that parallel height to the floor, you'll see that your forearm, wrist, and hand has started a slight rotation. And it would be a slight, what would be, again, if you're facing forward, a slight clockwise rotation. Not much yet, okay? But what you'll find is that your thumb has started to rotate slightly, maybe about 45 degrees from where it was, which in some ways is a very good indictment for the American grip, right? Which, where your thumb is not completely and totally, your palm is not completely and totally facing the floor. It's more of at a 45 degree angle, and your thumb is at a bit of a 45 degree angle. It's not facing the other thumb. So that's a pretty good case, right? For your American grip. So we're at forearm parallel to the floor, right? So we can see a little bit of rotation and a little bit of change in hand positioning there, right? So now what I want you to do is go ahead and, again, from the elbow only, allow your arm, again, to move up. In other words, you want to bring your arm up toward your shoulder, And you'll notice as your arm slowly moves up, you'll feel more rotation in your forearm and in your hand. And by the time you get your arm all the way up, or you get your hand all the way up to where your shoulder is, what you will notice is that now your palm is facing your shoulder and the back of your hand has rotated to where it is facing outward in front of you. Your thumb is now no longer facing your body, but is facing away from you. So with your arm rotating upward and moving to a higher level, you will see your hand positioning and arm positioning change. So now maybe that makes a little bit more sense when we talk about surface height affecting your grip and hand positioning. So again, think about it from this standpoint. When you are playing snare drum, for example, let's say you're playing a drum set groove where you have to play, say, a marching style groove, or even say like a New Orleans street beat style thing using match grip on your snare drum, it feels really good and it's very, very comfortable to use like a matched American style grip because our arm and hand just ergonomically wants to work that way, doesn't it? So now let's go ahead and talk about these higher elevated surfaces. Again, we'll talk about maybe a ride cymbal that's mounted above some tom-toms. If you place your stick and place your hand in the position to play that cymbal, it just feels right to have your thumb on top because our body ergonomically wants to rotate our forearm and rotate our wrist to where the thumb is more on top whenever we play. You'll notice it to be able to play like a proper German grip where you're using your wrist and your palm is facing away from you, facing downward, you have to force your hand to do that. It can be done, certainly, but it's a little bit uncomfortable because you do have to force your forearm and wrist to rotate in that fashion to be able to play that proper German grip where you're using, you know, primarily wrist whenever you do that. So that's the what I would like to say about surface height and how it affects your hand positioning. Moving forward, we'll talk about the angle of the surface that you play and how it affects your hand positioning. And basically, again, think about the different surfaces and the different angles that you have on your drum set. Now, of course, I'm going to talk about there are certain angles of certain drums that some people angle differently from what I'm going to discuss. But for the most part, I would say the majority of the people will relate to what I'm going to say here. On our drum set, we have very flat surfaces, sometimes just very lightly angled surfaces. We would consider them almost flat. And then we also have some severely angled surfaces that we play on from time to time as well. So, for example, some of the flat surfaces that we would have, most of the time, our snare drum, especially if we're playing with a match grip, will be flat or slightly angled toward us. But a lot of times it's considered primarily or mostly flat for what we're playing. Now, if you're a traditional grip guy, and especially if you're an old school traditional grip guy, you might do a fairly severe angle of your snare drum even away from you. So, you know, again, I'm aware of that. Just want to make a generality here when we're talking about this with this flat surface with the snare drum. Another flat surface that we primarily have, that virtually everyone has, is the flat surface of the hi-hat that we play on. It's a little bit higher. In other words, it's normally mounted a tad bit higher than snare drum for most of us. But again, the playing surface is primarily flat. Then we have some accessories that we might have mounted around the drum set as well. And those accessories could be things like cowbells. They could be wood blocks, that type of thing. We primarily play those flat, or at least they're mounted flat. Sometimes there could be a very slight angle on those. Our hand positioning when we play those is a little bit different the majority of the time, or at least you should think of it as being amenable to change whenever you play on that versus the angled surfaces. And then the angled surfaces that we sometimes play, might be like our mounted toms, our rack toms. Depending on the height of how we mount those things, we might have to mount our toms fairly severely angled. For example, if you're using a 26-inch bass drum, most of us are not 6'7 or 6'8. And so if we're a normal height of 6 feet or sometimes a little lower, smaller than that, shorter than that, whenever we have a play a larger bass drum like that, we had to be able to physically access these toms. We have to mount them at a little bit more of a severe angle. And that, of course, can change our grip and our hand positioning when we do that. And then we've already talked about cymbals. Cymbals in particular are probably the most common and graphic example of that. And again, we can throw back to the story about when I was teaching in the classroom. We've got we've got a drum set that has several mounted toms, and to place the ride cymbal above those tom-toms, we have to raise it up fairly high and then angle it inward a little bit. And then we've got the ever-present vertical China cymbal. Boy, that thing, that sucker has come up on 3 or 4 different podcasts. You guys are going to think that when you see my drum set that I've got 2 of those things setting up, but I don't. I don't have any of them. It's just, for some reason, it seems to come up from time to time. So, there you go. Surface height for hand positioning and grip can make things change. Or surface angle, I should say. And then we also have surface hardness or surface density can certainly affect your grip. And what we mean by that is when we play a drum set, there are many different feeling surfaces that we have to play. Some of them are soft, some of them are hard, somewhere in the middle. And so for our softest surfaces, let's take, for example, like an 18-inch floor tom, a big old floor tom. We have that thing tuned down low, and perhaps we're even using like a double ply head. It's going to be pretty boggy, isn't it, whenever you play on it? Well, quite honestly, when you're playing on a surface like that, there's not that much finger technique and finesse that'll go into that a lot of times. Quite honestly, guys, you got to have some hands to make that thing speak and to make it move, right? To get some articulation out of it. So, for example, on something like that, our grip might be a little bit firmer and we might use more wrists, okay? So, if you want to take the 180 degree opposite of that, when we take a harder surface, for example, let's say that we have a really tight, highly tuned snare drum. Well, with that, we can use a much looser grip and allow some finger control and a lighter touch to allow some rebound on that, right? In other words, and let's take, for example, a cowbell as well. Got to be careful with that, right? You don't want to overpower that, don't want to use too much wrist, and certainly don't want to strike through on that. You want to play to that surface and allow that instrument to give you some rebound, right? So you can actually control the rebound, use some finger control on that, and not absorb all the shock. So again, there's a good example of some changing grip and hand positioning whenever you're playing these different surfaces. And then lastly, and actually maybe most importantly, and the one thing that I notice in my own playing and in my own practice is fatigue can certainly change your grip. Now, let me go ahead and say this. The fatigue aspect of this is something that can certainly change things negatively, okay? Before, on these different topics that we were talking about, things like tempo and styles of music, volume and velocity, surface angle and hardness, that kind of stuff. That's all, when your grip changes and your hand positions change with that, that's, you know, that's just kind of on the fly and it's a positive thing. In other words, these are things that if you think about them and you make these adjustments, or even if you don't think about them and the adjustments are just made subconsciously, it's to your benefit, right? Well, this last part that I want to talk about is actually something to be aware of that can be, you know, detrimental to your playing. And basically what I've noticed is that if I'm tired, if I'm on the last set of a 4-hour gig where I'm, you know, maybe 6 gigs in during the week and I'm dead tired, sometimes the old mental faculties will let you down a little bit. You know, you get tired, and like the thing that happens to me a lot of time is I try to, or I don't say I try, but I sometimes then over control or over grip my sticks when I'm playing. And if you over-control and over-grip, it's not a good thing. Basically, what that leads to is holding your sticks too tight, disallowing rebounds, especially when you're playing on harder surfaces. Like, for example, when we talked about playing at louder volumes and smashing a backbeat on 2 and 4, got to be careful there. You don't want to use the tight grip on that, for sure. And if you over-control your sticks when you're playing that, that can certainly lead to some hand discomfort and, you know, worst-case scenario, some little bit of injury there with that. And over a long period of time, certainly some injury on it. But short-term effects, you could just have some, you know, detriments in your playing by over-controlling your sticks when you do that. Cause, of course, just some executional errors, whether it be in time or just executional errors when you're trying to play some musical ideas. So anyway, hopefully that gives you a few things to think about this week. Again, like I said, this podcast was meant to just kind of throw some concepts at you, some ideas. It's not one of those things where I'm telling you that every single thing that I'm telling you here is, you know, by rote and by law. But basically, again, just think about what you're doing. Be mindful. Be aware of when you're playing that certain things can affect your grip. It can affect your hand positioning. A lot of times to your benefit, but then again, sometimes to your detriment. And overall, you just don't want to be so dogmatic from the standpoint to where you force yourself to do things, technique-wise, grip-wise, hand positioning-wise, that takes away from the musical experience. You want to be mindful of what you're doing. You want to be aware of what you're doing. Be curious. Notice these things, right? Conceptualize these things. Figure out when you're going through this stuff. This feels good. This doesn't feel good. And why does it not feel good? Why is it taking away from my enjoyment when I do this? And I would be willing to bet that with a little bit of creativity, a little bit of curiosity and mindfulness, you'll be able to correct these things. And once again, steer that boat back on course and have a great time. All right, guys. As usual, thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it. We look forward to bringing you new content every Monday. We look forward to hearing from you. So please, once again, visit us on our Facebook page at Drummers Weekly Groovecast, our Twitter page at twitter.com/DW Groovecast, and email us directly at drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. All right. Until next week, we will talk to you soon. Keep it in the pocket. Bye-bye. Shoot me, baby. Shoot me. Shoot me.